Heather,
oh,
I'm
good
sorry.
Catch. Good catch. Good catch. We do like to record these things so we can put them up on the toolbox. I'm glad he caught that one. But we have made that official decision that we are not holding it in person, but we are holding it virtually. So this is a whole new world for us. We're very excited about this one. So please mark it on your calendars. It'll be the same time frame that we were looking at anyway. But the virtual, brand new virtual all-grantee meeting will be held August 11th through August 13th. August 11th through August 13th, it will be held. We will use Zoom for the medium that we will be using. And we are going to hold it from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock Eastern. And the reason why that time frame was chosen is because that would make it, what, 8 o'clock East or 8 o'clock Alaska. So we didn't want to get our far folks on the Alaska time zone up way too early either. So we tried to think about all those time zones there. So 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock Eastern is the time frame that we're going to be holding it. So we understand some of you guys might be eating lunch during the middle of it or might be having breakfast or your mid-morning coffee break. It's totally fine. Bring your own snacks. We're fine with that, but we're really excited for this opportunity. So August 11th through August 13th from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock Eastern, we're going to have a mix still of plenaries and breakout sessions. We're even trying to figure out how to get some networking in there, maybe even some really kind of take advantage of the fact that we're virtual and do some kind of interesting novel things in there. So we've got a couple of different things we're kind of playing around and checking out with. But we need your guys' help. So over the weekend, I sent out an email to the listserv, and in that there was a link to a SurveyMonkey website. So we're doing a really quick scan. I think it's been taking people like 2 minutes to fill out. What we're just needing is your feedback on topics and a couple other questions that we had. We always have these things being led by grantee mentors, by mentors that have been out there in the field. We have you guys help lead those conversations, lead those topics. That's part of what makes these programs as successful as they are. So we're looking for volunteers for that. We're looking for feedback on topics. And don't be afraid. We have spots for comments. Don't be afraid to put down if there's something you think would be of interest that we don't already have on there. Please let us know, because we go through and reread all of those. And that might have us add in something brand new or something totally different. So please definitely take a 2 minutes if you haven't already and fill out that scan. That's really, really important to us. And we would really appreciate your feedback. I'll probably send that out one more time again. I'll probably do it tomorrow since I sent a kind of a listserv post out today reminding about the PLC. So if you don't see it in your inbox from this weekend, keep an eye out for it tomorrow. And if you don't get emails from me already, go ahead and send me an email, hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu. And I'd be more than happy to get you on our listservs. And then you'd be getting the scan tomorrow anyway. So we'd really appreciate your help on that. We look forward to getting that filled up. As soon as we get our schedule figured out here in the next few weeks, as soon as we get those survey results back, we're going to send a really lot more formalized registration link than what we typically do in the past, where you'll actually having to be selecting your breakout sessions. And the reason for that is it's because of how we're going to have to structure the virtual breakout sessions this year. So things will look a little different this year. We're going to kind of get it a little bit more structured for some of those things. But we think you guys will have a really good time with it, and we're really excited to find a good solution to still be able to have a really fun all-grantee meeting in August.
I think this is going to be lots of fun. It may not be as polished as The Voice or some of those things you see on TV, but I think it's going to be neat. We're going to do breakout rooms. We're going to have student testimonials. I don't know if we'll get any singers on here. And we're maybe even talking about a virtual tour. If some of you have a video of your facility and would like to send it to Heather, just let her know. Send it in, and we'd like to have some tours of some facilities, and we just won't be face-to-face, but it should be a lot of fun. And, of course, these are participatory meetings where everyone gets involved and peer-to-peer exchange of ideas. So we'll be in these breakout sessions, and people get to choose what breakout sessions they want to go to. That was the purpose of the scan, and we'll be asking you later on what you may want to participate in. So should be a lot of fun, and I would send in the scan, and we'll be sending out more information as we go, and certainly any ideas that you might have. So the let's talk about the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Grantee for a second. Grantees and you all are more important now than ever. You're potentially providing jobs to underserved residents who have been impacted by the industrialization and the pollution of your community. But now, more than ever, the pandemic and the resulting recession. So we've got environmental justice going on. We've got health justice going on. And we've got economic justice going on. And at the intersection of all of these is the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program. It's what we're doing, what we're all doing. We find ourselves in an interesting spot here with the pandemic, and we have to look at that. Where are we, and how can we push forward? And we've kind of categorized this into four different groups among us. We've got some of you who were newly awarded grants this last winter, and you may be just getting your authorization to proceed. If you've got a, I'm going to just talk about this, you may have to mute your phone if you have a, these microphones are very sensitive, so if you've got an open, we've got all open mics, so have to be real quiet or mute your phone. We've got newly awarded grantees who were just awarded grants last fall. We've got grantees or people out there who want to apply for a grant that'll be coming up this June or July, this summer, the RFP. And these are people who don't have grants yet. They're organizations who would like to get a grant, or they're re-upping. They've had a grant. They may be coming to the end of that grant, and they want to apply for this. The schedule was put in the procession notes are pretty much, if we're talking about a RFP that comes out this summer, we'll be getting authorization for training about next year at this time. By the time you figure 2 months to submit your proposal, it puts us about August, September timeframe, and then the evaluation through the fall at EPA. And then, of course, you got to work through work plans, and we've got Christmas vacation. So you start talking about having money to spend on your program in the spring, early summer of next year. And then, of course, you'll be planning your program next spring and summer for probably your first cohort will be starting in the fall. So that's kind of the schedule. We put in the post-session notes our best estimate. These are just guesses that if this is when it comes out, this is what it may look like, just to give you an idea of what you might be training. That may have some influence of how you write your grant. And we're going to be talking about writing grants for the next several PLCs between now, in fact, the next PLC all the way through when they're due. We'll be focusing on the RFP, the ranking criteria, and those things. And that's aimed for those of you who are either re-upping or you're an organization and want to apply for grants. So that's certainly one of the groups that we're concerned with. Of course, as we said, the newly awarded grantees, if you've been newly awarded and you haven't started your program yet, you're probably in a pretty good spot. Fortunately, I think EPA is being very understanding. We are all in the same boat. And, of course, extensions will be allowed and will be it'll give you an opportunity to strategically see how you want to move ahead with your training program. That will be very dependent on all of these things will be very dependent on your local policy, your local health situation, whether you, they allow classes to begin, whether you're even allowed into your, whether it's a community college or organization's facility. Those are all going to be local decisions. So our grantees will be all over the place. Some may be able to get started. Some may be operating through this pandemic, and some may just have to wait. The third group that most concerns us is those who have been interrupted. You're halfway through your cohort, and we've got grantees out there that may have done half their cohort, and then all of a sudden the curtain came down, and they had to shut their training down. And of course, those we're focusing on how do you keep your students engaged? How do you keep them going? How do you perhaps find temporary employment for them to have them come back? How do you provide incentives so they'll come back? So that's kind of the third group that we're trying to address in these PLCs. And then a fourth group are those of you who have actually gone through a cohort. You've placed some graduates. You may have not placed them all. It's graduate placement and tracking. And you may have alumni who are coming back to your program and saying, well, I had a great job, but I was laid off, or for whatever reason, we shut down and I'm looking for reemployment. Can you help me? And so those are the four groups that we're going to try to address in the coming PLCs, each of those, and how we're all impacted by this, and what can we do given something that's not our fault and something that's just externality. How can we move forward? And we can in each of these cases. We can do some things. And what can we do strategically to keep our programs going, to prepare us for actually better delivery than we've had in the past? I'd like to take a second to kind of ask around how is everybody doing? Are we pretty much shut down? Are we doing any operation? I know, Jake, you're doing some recruitment. Is that correct? Up at Alperol?
Yes, you're referring to Jake from Auberly in Pittsburgh?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes, we are doing some recruitment right now. We actually just had our advisory board meeting yesterday and started to talk to our referral network partners and started to talk to them about things like, do their clients have internet access? And one of the things we recently implemented is we have a technology agreement where we can provide individuals with iPads, hotspots, and some laptop technology to assist them with. But really just getting our team together with our advisory board and talking to our referral partners who are the predominant people who bring us recruits and, game plan with them and have a backup plan and plan A and everything like that.
Now, one problem with our program is, by definition, 1910-120, we're talking about face-to-face contact. So you can do a classroom part of it. Now, that's really the only absolutely necessary part where we got some real problems in terms of staying 6 feet apart. We could deliver a lot of classroom training if, and those are big ifs, if your student population if you've got the curriculum, if your student population is tablet or computer literate, if you're set up for it. Are you planning at all of doing any kind of training, or are you going to be, is that all pre-planning, getting ready for training?
So we are currently in what's called the yellow phase. So our trainer is allowed to provide in-person training services, provided that each person sits at their own table and each person is wearing a mask and is screened prior to doing the training that day. The one difficult part is going to be the hands-on action that they're doing as they're practicing their HAZWOPR, putting on the PPE. They're still planning on how to sort that out and how to take protective measures to sort of switch that around.
Excuse me, Jake. This is Ronique from West End Neighborhood House. Quick question: how many people did you recruit for this cohort coming up?
So for our term, our grant cycle term, we are to provide training for 50 individuals. We are going to attempt to split that into four. For our first cohort, we're going to err on the side of smaller. A nice number for us would be 12. And we know that our training provider has 16 tables available for each person to have their own individual table to distance properly.
Okay.
So you may be – go ahead.
Mike, that's my biggest question. Like, we're kind of limited in regards to our facility, but I had, we're scheduled – we're scheduled to open back up. Our managers through our program are supposed to report on the 15th of June, And then our regular staff will report on the 29th. And then our students, we also have a GED program in the facility as well, too. They are supposed to report July 13th. I recruited, my number went up since last cohort, and got about 20 people. And, I mean, they were out before this situation, they were talking about, you know, trying to boost the number up for additional contractors to bring in about 25 or 30. So, I mean, just with the number, I still have to contact my contractor, you know, just in regards of how we're going to work it in regards to physical. I use the term physical distancing. I mean, I've learned that. I took a COVID-19, mental health during COVID-19 certification online, and the professor is pretty much, instead of social distancing, he uses the term physical distancing, because in these times of need, we need to be more social. Just point blank.
Very good. We'll do.
And I mean, that stuck to me very much so, especially the population that we serve. We need to be more social. And during keeping them engaged was a task. We were supposed to start March 16th, I believe it was. That was supposed to be the spring cohort. And just in trying to keep them engaged, the incentive was pretty much, you know, them get those 12 certifications. We offer 12 certifications upon completion. We had a lot of good success. I did a good job of social media marketing the program, and word of mouth did his job as well, too. And we had a lot of success. We brought in 17, all 17 graduated. Currently right now have about 10 people placed. So it went well. It went well, but this is definitely, I'm worried about, you know, we caught our numbers in the last time, but I mean, like, 20, just like what Jake said, you might have to drop that down to about 15 or 12 to 15 people, just in regards to the whole physical distancing situation. But my contractor he was based out of New Jersey. So he was apprehensive of even coming down here, period. So,
Is there any thought out there of breaking your classes into two cohorts within your cohort? For example, maybe have a Tuesday and a Wednesday class, or does that wreak havoc with your vendors, your training vendors?
This is Sachin in Kansas City.
Yes.
I'm sorry. And we were in the middle supposed to have our first cohort as well. One of our trainers, our lead trainer, says he's only going to take groups of 10 individuals, but he's willing to do trainings on Saturdays and do additional sessions. So that's the conversation I'm having now with our other contractors to see what this will look like, or doing just a week of HAZWOP. We're kind of changing the whole timeline. But I like the cohort within the cohort. I like that idea. So we've been playing around with that.
Do I get the feeling, and Overall is really way ahead of the game in terms of their organization being computer savvy, communication savvy. This is the difference between us and the TAB grantees. Those people are dealing with City Hall, they're dealing with city planners, and these people are all doing Zoom all the time. We're different. We're environmental justice. We're in the neighborhoods. We're in the streets. We can't assume that our participants have maybe even phones, have computers, tablets, and even if they did, whether they could, you could develop the distance learning programs. Is there a consensus here that we really have to, it seems like it's almost like face-to-face is the way we're going on these programs. Would anyone dispute that, or?
I think it has to be for some of the certifications. Jake already mentioned it for HAZWOP for 40, and I believe for the asbestos worker, and there's only but so much. I mean, I think it's two out of the three that you have to be on site for. And, you know, our contractor, even with that, we were going to have people. You can't, by federal law, you can't even have more than 25 people within that group. So I think it's like two requirements that they have to be on site. But he only does, I have to circle back with him, he offers refreshers, and I said that to, I brought that up to my supervisor. We could probably do a second cohort for refreshers. We're trying to catch a number, you know,
right.
just for people from the, people in the past cohorts.
Right.
But the, all the other classes you can do, he has he offers webinars or 1 day refreshers, you know. So he doesn't have anything
right.
As of yet. The one guy, the contract that we're working with.
Right. It appears that it's highly dependent on your trainer and what he's got available in terms of whether it's distance learning or computer skills or being able to teach a line course online. That may be the determining factor of how you want to. Now, we're talking about those who are re-upping as well as those who are caught in the middle of their cohort, because when we start writing these grants, which we'll be talking about and doing these proposals and responding to ranking criteria, you don't want to go somewhere where you can't go. I mean, if it may determine your screening process. You may need to, when we do community assessments and who you're recruiting, remember, this is an environmental justice program. You may be demonstrating in your proposal that you're recruiting in a population and a target group who is, it's not going to make distance learning a slam dunk like it would be for other types of training. And you may have to work with your trainers and your contractors of how can you make this work. One advantage is for new grantees, it's a year out. That's one possibility. That's a good thing for a lot of new people.
Well,
Michael, this is Paul from Recycle Force out of Indy. And to those challenges, I know we're in a unique situation here with our social enterprise and consider essential service. So we've been continuing to stay open through this crisis. What we've identified, I mean, we have classroom training here, and we've been fortunate to partner with a large bank in the area that has provided some of our electronic equipment for us. And we have some rooms that we can do the physical distancing. And I thought that was a really great comment that was made earlier, because it, even though it's a subtle play on words, it's a, words are powerful, right? And so people have a tendency to disconnect even further if they hear social distancing, just not physically, but, you know, mentally and psychologically. So I thought that was excellent. And that's what we're changing our verbiage here to physical distancing, because we see a disconnect even more so than in the past. Also, we see a change in our work population. There's more people that have been thrown into homelessness. And so we brought someone on board that's very deep in that community with boots on the ground to direct them here, since we have a partnership with the city of Indianapolis and their Department of Public Works. So we're able to feed them and then get them to where they need to go. And this training online, let's say a distant training, not on site or from people's residences, wherever they may live, what we found is it takes a special individual to have the discipline and knowledge of how to navigate computer programs in general. So even though we've had some success with that, those people have more skills than what I'll call our traditional population that come into our program, which, you know, we have a on-site job and training coordinator that helps them through the basics of how do you log on? How do you get a username, password? How do you navigate through the program? How do you test? How do you retest? Those things. So it can be very challenging if they're not, you know, for someone they could resource in doing that.
Well, Paul, you have a really good point. You know, when we talk about trainers among ourselves, we, distance learning, we're going to go online, we're going to do all these wonderful things, and a few grantees are able to do that. But we have to remember this program is heavily dependent on team building, where we have circles of elders that are coaching young ex-offenders on how to live their lives in the morning. we have out in Cypress Mandela, doing calisthenics and exercises in the morning, having these circles of teamwork, having events where people are face-to-face. And I really like that idea of physical distancing versus social distancing. We have to be close as a team. And that flows through when we get to retention. One of the biggest factors in retention is building a team, so that when someone slips, his coworkers, his peers prop him up. And how do you do that on a computer? You know, how do you do that?
And I think that's, Mike, I think you hit the nail. We're all talking about working together. And we're talking about getting back to work and opening up our doors. The population that we serve, they have experienced trauma upon trauma. This pandemic has not been, you know, the good for anyone. So I've even been considering individuals who may have been to work, you know, for probably the last 5 to 10 years, and they have to go back and do the whole process all over again. So they need to learn how to create a resume, update their resume. But the frustration of, like, hey, I was just working for the last 10 to 15 years or whatever, and going back to work, and then, you know, the sense of hopelessness and doing it all over again, it just puts you in a bad place. I mean, and that's why we do need to create a universal language. Everyone, staff, you need to be on board and what you say, and, you know, and what you say and how you say things to certain individuals. And even doing, you know, a trauma-informed case management piece and doing your assessments with individuals. And that's what we're trying to do here at West End. Like, I'm not the smartest guy. I barely graduated high school. I barely graduated college. I kind of fell into this position. I don't know too much about this, don't know too much about that. But I think my superpower is helping people and generally caring. And I think that's why I've had some success doing what I'm doing thus far, even doing the engagement piece. When people know that you generally care, I think you can, it's easy for you to redirect them when they're not coming or being tardy or even just being disorderly, like during class, you know, not being attentive. Yep. I was able to do those sorts of things. And I put a lot of things in perspective because they know I generally care. And we've seen those individuals who committed to themselves. It was more so for us to commit to them. But I mean, you know, it's having masks, providing them with masks every day, them abiding certain individual rules. So it's my program is only 5 weeks long, but those 5 weeks can be trying during any circumstances, especially if we're going to talk about doing a summer cohort where it's hot and you have to wear a mask. And the heat may not, and the AC may not be on, or it's just so many other variables that we have to really worry about on top of servicing individuals with special needs and considerations too. So, I mean, I think
Ken Alexander nailed it for Recycle Force a couple times ago. He said, I asked him, I said, where do your dropouts go when they don't? He said, they got nowhere else to go. This is where they go. So, I mean, we have to keep that in mind that we do have a special population. Someone wanted to comment, and you were interrupted. Any want to leave the floor open for any comments?
Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Mike, this is Angela, and we can't overlook the technical issues that we have in the communities that we serve. Unless you're in a very large metropolitan area, the infrastructure for residential and even commercial internet is not robust. And that's really been quite evident as everyone's turned to working from home and trying to run training the pieces that are allowable. I mean, you can't do a lot of certification, but trying to run training in non-metropolitan areas for low technology consumers is not going well in a lot of places. Internet interruptions and drop-offs are very common and very frustrating for our populations. The infrastructure is not there to support it. It was never designed for it. Right.
And actually, a bad training program is worse than no training program. And if we're going to put basically half-assed training out there, we need to make sure that we're just not going through motions, that our people come out well-vetted, they're team players, they're reliable, and they have their certifications and they know their stuff. So we don't want to compromise the program in this time and just in the name of this virus, certainly. And I think going forward, we need to look at, there are a lot of things we can do during this period. I think as a group, we might all reinforce each other and get some assurance that you're not alone in the problems you have in your community and this problem with distance learning. We've got some grantees that are chipping away at it. You're kind of our frontiersman of seeing what's going to work. We're going to rely on you to see how some of this is turning out. Overall, in terms of the administrative and recruitment, being able to do as much as they can online, West End, working with your contractors. I think as we go forward in the coming weeks, we want to hear from you and seeing how these, they're kind of experiments, how are they working out? And there are also things that we want to focus on, and we'll probably start on this next PLC, is, well, what can we do, us as administrative project managers, what can we do? Not necessarily, we've been talking about the training aspect, but we can talk about the administrative, which includes development of partners, who we should be partnering with, how do we get our leveraging resource together. These are people who do have computers and may be back to work, some of them. How do we interact with City Hall? How can we build up our partnerships that will, under this new circumstances of this virus, how do we maybe choose? We may want to look at, for re-up people, we may want to reassess our partners and say, okay, given this point in time, maybe we need to bring on a different set of partners than we've had in the past. Or for those who are going out and just brand new, maybe we need to look at, or do we want to be physical agent, or maybe we should be pairing up with the city at this point because they're going to bring a lot more strength to this program. So I think what we want to do is I think going forward, we want to continue finding out what we're doing in terms of training and how we're trying to overcome these training issues. And then also look at what can we do in terms of maybe developing curriculum or designing our curriculum. We may be designing curriculum for current cohorts that are more oriented towards virus and decontamination, bloodborne pathogens, whatever. Or how do we develop our leveraging resources more than what we had in the past? This could be a positive thing for people re-upping where they really didn't need strong partners in the past. And they may find that, well, maybe let's sit back now and look, and maybe on this new grant proposal that we're going to be writing in the next month or two, maybe we need to take a broader look at who our partners are going to be, and we may want to shift this around. So that's kind of the direction we're going in, and I don't want to spend, we try to keep these short enough so it doesn't take your whole afternoon. Anyone want to say anything or contribute something that they feel that they're doing well or they're really struggling with or need some encouragement, thinking that maybe they're doing something that other people aren't faced with those issues?
Hey, Mike, this is Sharon Beard from NIHS. How are you doing?
Hi, Sharon. Good.
I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention the resources that we have available on COVID-19 kind of awareness training and essential worker training that's available. If you go to our NIEHS page and just put in NIEHS COVID-19 training. You will get to that page and pull up all the material, and all this material is free of charge and it's available. And we actually even have an online learning portal that we've developed for our awareness training that's available. So anybody can take that and sign up through our contract that we have with Vivid Learning to do that. But then you can also download the material and add it to your own LMS if you have training that's available. So I just wanted to make sure people are there, show that that information is available, and that that you can also look at some of the other training tools and materials that our grantees have developed from different target populations that I think will be useful to some of the folks who are on the call, and also some webinars and trainings that we've looked at for workers and you know, the whole issues of returning to work and actually what's going to be need to be done in the classroom setting and in reference to training and some of the issues that are going to have to be dealt with. So we'll continue to put that information out there and make it available to people, especially since we're all now looking at these new guidelines on what would a HAZWOP course look like if you're going to be dealing with social distancing in the COVID-19 era that we're dealing with right now. So I think that we've seen training already going on right now at the Department of Energy sites, and that's kind of where we see the bulk of this, and I know training has already started. But I think one of the other things about certifications is that DOE has decided to give people 180-day variance. So even if you're a HAZWOPer, while other training has expired, they're giving you 180 days to, you know, get it. And I think that so you have to look at all those types of things and to see if it's something that's viable. And I think states and other entities are looking at that too. I'm not quite sure how EPA is going to deal with that true HAZWOP standard about that, but it would be interesting to hear from them about that as far as certification, so people wouldn't have to take a 40-hour over again during this time of COVID.
NIHS has been a tremendous resource for us, and we, in every post-session notes, we do links to COVID and what you're doing, and you're really leading the way, and rightfully so. Have any of your grantees been able to crack this nut of a 1910-120 in terms of face-to-face? Are they still trying to figure out how that might work?
We're looking at that right now. Like I said, the Department of Energy is probably further along than anybody in reference to doing this. And so, I mean, they're really looking at how they can make this done. I don't know of any HAZWOP course that's been offered as of yet because of the issues of, you know, social distancing and all the other concerns. But that's something that we're all grappling with and trying to develop protocols to look at that and trying to see how you can do it effectively and safely. And so it's something that everybody's trying to deal with right now. And so as soon as we find out something, as soon as we see or hear about programs who've done it well and have some guidance, then we'll certainly share it with everybody.
That's fantastic. You know, go ahead.
This is Tony Wood with the National Spill Control School at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. What we have done, we have a college course and commercial HAZWOP courses that we teach. And one of the things that we are doing now is we've presented synchronous webinars for the first 3 days of HAZWOP, what we're calling the theory course. And that covers, it'll be 24 hours in length. And then the final 2 days, we're not scheduling until fall. And I got online with OSHA and asked them if this would be an acceptable approach to them. And they did feel that that would be okay in light of the current situation we're in.
I do have a question, too. Just with, like, the every one person per table and the face mask, those are kinds of things we've talked about as well. But is there anything else that people feel? I thought somebody said something about screening them for the day, or what other requirements that could make the students feel safe enough to come back to an in-person class?
This is Abby.
Go ahead.
Oh, this is Auberly, and Jake was the one who mentioned about us screening individuals. So the reason why we have to do that, we're actually required. Auberly is also a very large foster care and residential provider as well. So just due to regulations put out by the state, we have to screen everyone who's coming into our building or is with us at a different training site just due to state regulations. So we have infrared temperature screenings as well as like the forehead thermometers to use as well. So that's just the reason why we have to do temperature screenings in addition to making everyone feel comfortable.
Yeah, I didn't know if that would make them feel like more paranoid or more comfortable. That's what we've been trying to debate is how much do we do?
Yeah, it's probably going to add to that initial paranoia, but what we've noticed on some of our residential programs is as we've continued to do it, it's just become like a part of their day. So the paranoia has gone away.
Okay.
This is Renee Dooley from St. Louis Community College, and although we haven't started back up with our environmental training yet, we have started some other hands-on, I'd say, workforce training. And we're also doing the screening for the same reason. The county where that college campus is located does require it. And students, we just were very clear in the, I guess, registration process that this would be a requirement daily. And we really just prepare students for, you know, what that screening process looks like. And if they're going to, if for some reason they meet any of those criteria, they should just not come to class that day, you know, obviously, and communicate with their instructor. But our employees are also required to do a screening every morning, and we have that automated now online for the employees, but the instructors actually do the screening with the students. So it is very cumbersome. You do have to allow time for it. You have to be sure your instructors are trained to do it, and they know, you know, which screening questions causes somebody to go home or if there's a combination, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, so it's not fun. And I can tell you people don't like wearing masks all day, instructors or students, but everyone is getting used to it. And we just hope, you know, that we don't have to do this very long. But with HazLoppers and, like, the equipment sharing and that kind of thing, we haven't figured that out yet, how to do that safely. So, definitely be looking for, you know, advice as we move along through these calls in the future.
Well, we'll be looking to Sharon's group and NIHS for guidance. They're going to work it out. They have a lot of smart people working on this, so I'm sure. But let's think about how far we've gone in the last month or so. I mean, when we first, our first scan of everyone is everybody would just shut down. So now we're in this stage where we're starting to, okay, well, maybe we could start screening students. Maybe we could start designing our program. Maybe we could start contemplating how we're going to submit a new grant for next year. So we're moving forward, and I think that's what we want to focus on is what's the latest thinking? What are other people doing? And how could we kind of keep moving forward, knowing that we're all in the same boat, and some of us are more challenged and more difficult target populations than others. But let's kind of learn from each other and see how we can move. There's some great ideas presented here today. Any other ideas? I don't want to take your day up or your afternoon, but some great ideas. And we'll be back together again in 2 weeks on the 10th of June. And between now and then, Heather, do you want to give them your contact information just for any questions, if you want to put on a post-session notes list or anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, my email address is hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, hkballou@eicc.edu. And I just wanted to say again, thank you for those of you that have already filled out that scan. And if you haven't, look back to that email. I sent it out on Sunday to the listserv, and I'll send it again probably tomorrow. Takes about 2 minutes to do. It's like three questions. It's nothing much, but it really provides us great information so we can build a better all grantee meeting. And hopefully you guys can participate with us virtually in August and have a great opportunity with that as well.
Particularly on that scan, there is a place that and you could expand what's on there if you'd like to talk about something in the breakouts. We're going to have all these breakouts that are on that scan. And of course, these breakouts are not going to – they're going to be presented as a peer-to-peer educational experience. So we want people in the group that to talk about things that they're familiar with that's working or not working in their grant. So feel free to – put your ideas down there, and if you'd like to talk about recruitment or placement, or you'd like to talk about computer tools, just jot down some ideas, and that'll help us as we develop the program. And again, we want to make this a joint effort where we're all participating in it. So, anything else, before we wind up? Okay. Well, we'll. I'll talk to you in same time, same place, same phone number on June 10th. So between now and then, have a good time.
All right.
Thank you.
Stay safe. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.